Dan, that was a bold statement that you knew me as a small child. Not many people are old enough to have known me as a small child. But we do love this church. We're glad to be able to be here. We were reflecting as we were driving over this morning. 17 years ago, we came for the first time. And a lot's happened in 17 years. A lot has happened to us. A lot has happened to you. A lot has happened to this church. Quite a few of you, maybe most of you, weren't here 17 years ago. That's a good thing that folks have continued to come here, and definitely a lot has happened in 17 years, and that's sort of the point today, that a lot happens. We live in uncertain times. I certainly could not have predicted a small fraction of the things that have happened over the last 17 years. We can't predict what's going to happen in 17 years, in 7 years, 1 year, 1 week, 1 day. You know, we're often caught off guard. We often realize that life is full of the unexpected and the uncertain. Speaking of uncertain, are you aware there's an election going on? Wow. I don't know about you, but at least the debates are over. You know, we were talking actually about the last two debates. I actually felt an anxiety level when it was about to come on, like, what in the world is going to happen? And, I think the one thing everyone seems to agree on is that nobody's ever seen anything like it. There's never been an election quite like this one. I love this. I thought this pretty much summed it all up. I may have lost it already. Oh, here we go. I clipped this out of the paper yesterday. It says this week, Ringling Brothers Circus is launching a campaign titled "The Circus Wants the Circus Back," because they're tired of people referring to the election as a circus, saying it casts a negative light on their profession. Election's given the circus a bad name. But you know, it does create a lot of uncertainty. You know, what in the world is going to happen? Not only what's going to happen 2 weeks from now, but what will happen after that? You know, what will happen in the next 4 years or 8 years or whatever? You know, what will happen if either one of them is elected? You know, and we're not going to get into that. But you've heard that before, I suspect, there's just a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen about all that. And people range from anywhere from mildly concerned to almost just paralyzed with fear about whichever one they think might or might not win. You know, is this the end of America as we know it? Well, I hope not. But there's a lot of uncertainty about that. There's a lot of uncertainty in our world. Oops, I got to push the button. We said that already. I'll get the hang of this in a minute. There's a lot of uncertainty in world events. You know, just a few years ago, nobody even had ever heard of terrorism. You know, and now that's something that's on people's minds pretty frequently. We aren't able to escape that very far. Sally and I take groups to New York twice a year, and we always go to Ground Zero and stand there, and you stand there, and it's just hard to imagine what happened on that spot. And it's still hard to believe. You go in the museum, the memorial there, and you tour that. And those of us who are old enough to have experienced that are still just reminded of that day and everything that's happened since then, how that changed our worlds. But it certainly thrust us into a very uncertain world, not only in our country, but all over the world, where just on a frequent basis, we hear about terrorism attacks and things happening that we could not have imagined before. We are in the middle of wars that don't seem to ever end. You know, wars used to happen and then they would end. It's almost unbelievable now that World War II just lasted 4 years. You know, it's just like, that hardly seems like a war at all. In spite of the fact that hundreds of thousands of people, of course, were killed. But wars used to happen and then they would end. And now we've been involved in many years for wars that don't ever seem to end. They kind of remind me of balloon animals. You know, you squeeze it one place and it pooches out someplace else. but a lot of uncertainty. And those create humanitarian crises. And we watch that on television. And numbers are staggering. How can millions of people be refugees? And even as we sit here this morning, crises continue to develop in places that we never would have thought we would have heard of, like Mosul and Aleppo, and places that dominate the news. We live in an uncertain world. Weather, you know, just what, 2-3 weeks ago, what was the hurricane going to do? You know, where is it going to come ashore? And obviously for people who live on the coast, that created an enormous amount of uncertainty. Created a little bit of uncertainty for us because we were supposed to go to Florida then. We decided maybe that wasn't the best time to go to Florida. But there's a lot of uncertainty. Floods and hurricanes and tornadoes and climate change. What in the world are we supposed to do about climate change? I didn't know I was supposed to even care about the polar ice cap. I do care about if the places we like to go in Florida end up underwater. I care about that. But fires and drought and, you know, all sorts of things. In our own lives, we're reminded that we live in uncertain times, in an uncertain world. You just never know what's going to happen next, even in our own lives. The people who suddenly have a spouse who says, I don't think I want to be married anymore. There are people who have children who come to them and say, I'm on drugs, or I'm flunking out of school, or I'm pregnant, or I'm gay. We have a boss who says, your position is being eliminated. Sometimes you have to be the boss who tells somebody your position is being eliminated. A routine trip to the doctor can lead to a diagnosis that in one sentence changes everything. A phone call can start with, there's been an accident. There could be notification, congratulations, you've won the lottery. Oh, wait, that sounds really different from those others I just said. But even good things can throw our lives into uncertainty and into uncharted territory. We have a job opportunity for you. We'd like for you to come preach Sunday. Even good things can be unexpected. You know, we're hardwired to like stability and structure and security. Our brains look for patterns. They fill in gaps when there's, things not where they would be expected. And we struggle when things don't fit. If I thought of this soon enough, I'd put this on the PowerPoint. But suppose I flashed up on the screen in big letters, B-L-U-E, big letters. And those letters were in bright red ink. And then I ask you, what color is that? And we go, what do you mean? Do you mean what do the letters spell or what does it look like? And you would just keep looking back and forth. You know, that's not important. But our brains have trouble dealing with that kind of conflicting, you know, information that comes at us like that. You know, I do work with the school. I work with the residential program for kids with disabilities, primarily autism. And so I live in a world of extreme examples of folks who need structure and sameness. You know, they don't like things to change. I walked into a classroom one day to have a student hurl a wooden box at my head because I'm not usually in that classroom. So just the fact that I stepped into it disrupted his world sufficiently that he thought he should communicate to me that I didn't need to be there, which he did. You know, even people who are free spirits are really only free spirits to a point, and they pick the things they're free spirits about. They don't want somebody else free-spiriting them. They want to choose those things. Well, in an uncertain world, God is faithful. You know, that seems like a simple statement, but it's actually a very profound one. You know, after 40 years of wandering in the desert, the children of Israel were on the brink of entering a promised land. That's good. Except it was about to change everything they had known for 40 years. Not only that, the only leader they had ever known was about to die. Thank you. Let me do that again. The only leader they had ever known was about to die, and they were going to go on without him. I'm sure I'll kick that over. And so Moses makes a speech to them to prepare them for going on without him. That speech is the book of Deuteronomy. And as he came near the end of that speech, as their world is about to completely change, they've been camping in the desert for 40 years. As awful as that was, they knew what to expect. Get up every morning, manna's there, wander around a little bit, go to bed. They were about to enter a completely different culture, a different land. They were going to be given this land, God said. Only slight problem was that land was already inhabited. It had cities all through it. There were people living in those cities. God said, there you go. Well, there's going to be some major challenges about that transition. And so Moses said to them, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or tremble at them, the people who are already there. For the Lord your God is the one who goes with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. And then Moses called Joshua and said to him in the sight of all the people, be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall give it to them as an inheritance. The Lord is the one who goes ahead of you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. I don't need that either. And then we came to the very end of that speech, almost the closing words of the speech. Moses said, there is none like the God of Israel who rides the heavens to come to your help. And through the skies in his majesty, the eternal God is a dwelling place. And underneath are the everlasting arms. Moses describes frightened children jumping into the strong arms of a loving father. Underneath are the everlasting arms. In an uncertain world, God is faithful. But not only is God faithful, and he's been faithful to his people, but we have examples of them being faithful to him. Hebrews chapter 11 has a number of such examples of people who believed God. Well, what does it mean that they believed God? Well, they believed that he was faithful. What does that mean that they believed he was faithful? Put most simply, it means that they believed what God said and then acted accordingly. And then God, in fact, kept his promises as they had believed. In verse 7 of chapter 11, it says, by faith Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. Right, I think we know that story. All right. But imagine Noah living in a world that was evil beyond our imagination. Completely evil. It might have caused Noah, who was a God-fearing person, to look at the world around him and go, where's God? Why does God let all this happen? Why do I see no evidence of God in the world around me? And yet, he believed God. How do we know he believed God? Because he built a boat. God said, I'm going to destroy the world. I'm going to cause a flood to come. And you need to build a boat. And so, how do we know Noah believed that? Because he built a boat. But you know, nothing changed. The world continued to be evil all the time Noah was building the boat. He still saw no evidence that God was at work in his world. All he saw was that it appeared that God had abandoned the world and abandoned him, except God told him to build a boat. And so he built a boat. And eventually the flood came. Noah was saved because he had believed God. How do we know he believed God? Because he built a boat. And sure enough, the flood came. In verse 8, we're told about Abraham. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. So we know that story probably also. Now, God called Abraham to leave his home, move to a different place. Didn't really fill in all the details right at first about where we're going. But Abraham got up and went. You know what? If God were to call me today in a similar way and say, I want you to get up and move to someplace else, and assuming I had the faith to do that, I would just call a moving company and say, come get all my stuff and box it all up and put it in a truck, and I'll get back to you on where we're going exactly. Or if I felt ambitious enough and had enough strong, healthy friends, I might rent a U-Haul and load up all my stuff and head wherever God's going to send me. You know, Abraham's stuff would not fit in a U-Haul. This is a little bigger operation than that. In fact, it's not just that Abraham had to explain to his wife that we're moving. Abraham had a virtual village around him who are all dependent on him. He had, we know, at least 318 male employees, and they had families. They're all moving. It's not just a family moving, it's a whole industry that's moving. When God said, I want you to move, that did not just involve Abraham and his stuff. It was, we know later, at least 318 trained fighting men. So maybe close to 1,000 people in all moved when Abraham moved. And they had a lot of stuff. Abraham was a very wealthy man. He had vast herds of animals. We're going to have a huge cattle drive to where? Not exactly sure. But let's get them moving. This had to be the craziest idea ever. Not just to convince Abraham, not just to convince Abraham's wife, but to convince all of these other people who've got to go too. And all of this stuff. But Abraham did that. Okay. How do we know he believed God? Because he moved. God had said, you're going to be a great nation. Your children, through your children, the earth will be blessed, so forth. So he got up and went. But then the story gets even more complicated than that. And I don't think I'd ever really noticed myself till reading this passage this week. A point that the Hebrew writer really strongly makes. And I think I had not really thought about this quite this way. Continuing reading about Abraham, it says, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises was offering his only begotten son. As it was he to whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called. What do we do when what God seems to be telling us doesn't make sense? What do we do when we can't jive together conflicting views of God? God is a God of justice. He's also a God of love and mercy. Okay? We have trouble getting that. We can talk about one, we can talk about the other. We have trouble bringing those together. Even the scripture says, behold the goodness and severity of God. It says that in one sentence. Well, I have trouble bringing those together exactly. The Hebrew writer makes a point of telling us that God was telling Abraham to do something that was in direct conflict with what God had already told Abraham. God told Abraham, offer your son. The Hebrew writer points out to us, the son in whom the promises were made. The son in whom it was said, in Isaac your seed will be called. God had told Abraham that through not just any descendant, but through Isaac, the world will be blessed. They're going to inherit this land. These things are going to happen through Isaac. And now that same God is telling Abraham, kill him. That doesn't fit. He's telling Abraham two directly conflicting things. So what is Abraham supposed to do? Abraham prepares to kill his son. Why would he do that? Because he believed God. Abraham, how is that going to work exactly? I don't know. But it's going to, because God said it. In fact, it says that Abraham believed that God could raise him from the dead. Had Abraham ever seen anybody raised from the dead? Not that I know of. But Abraham believed that if God says something, it's going to happen. And if God says through Isaac the world will be blessed, then through Isaac the world's going to be blessed. But what if you kill him? The world's still going to be blessed through him, even if God has to bring him back to life. God's people have been faithful. Well, I have a point that's not on the PowerPoint. It's a late developing point. We'll get to this in a second. You know, not only is God faithful, God's people can be faithful to Him, but in uncertain times, God's Word is faithful and certain. There is no later edition. You know, there may be translations, but there's no later edition. In Isaiah, the prophet said, "The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our Lord abides forever." Paul wrote to Timothy from prison, and Paul said, "They can imprison me like a criminal, but they can't imprison the word." 2 Timothy 2:9. Peter wrote, "For you have been born again, not of seed which is perishable, but imperishable, that is, through the living and enduring word of God." It goes back to the fact that God doesn't change. What He says doesn't change. Now, I would say also in changing and uncertain times, God's kingdom is unshakable. In Hebrews chapter 12, the writer said, he's making reference to when God spoke at Mount Sinai and the mountain shook. So making reference back to that, he says, "And His voice shook the earth then, but now He has promised, saying, 'Yet once more I will shake not only the earth, but the heaven.'" And this expression, "yet once more," denotes the removing of those things which can be shaken as of created things, in order that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we receive a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us show gratitude by which we may offer to God an acceptable service with reverence and awe. God's church is unshakable. It's interesting that the Hebrew writer said that eventually every created thing will cease. Every created thing will be destroyed. No created thing is permanent. He says the only thing that's going to last is the church. When everything else is gone, the church will remain. God's kingdom is permanent. But there are uncertain times for the church. Our culture is in uncertain times. It seems there's a war on Christianity, where it seems like increasingly the church has to operate in a hostile culture and environment. Obviously, congregations can go through difficult times. And yet the church was established in one of the most hostile of times, both culture and government. You know, we may worry about where our culture is going, but in the ancient Greek world, it was already gone. It was way down the road from where we are today. And they had a government that was completely hostile to Christianity in its early days, to the extent that you could be executed for being a Christian. And the whole culture was designed against it. And yet in that environment, the church was established and flourished. And it will continue to flourish. It will continue to survive. And we could finally say that in uncertain times, I know that eternity is certain. The Hebrew writer back in chapter 11, early in the chapter, said, "And without faith it is impossible to please Him. For he who comes to God must believe that He is, and that He is a rewarder of those who seek Him." So you have to have faith. What does it mean? What does that mean to have faith? We have to have faith to please Him. Okay, what is faith? Well, faith is believing that God is and that God does what He says, including rewarding those who seek for Him. You know, Jesus met with His apostles the night before He was going to die. They met in an upper room, and Jesus, of course, instituted the Lord's Supper, but also talked to them a great deal. In that night, Jesus knew what was going to happen in just a few hours. And He was trying to prepare them for that, even though there was no way to adequately prepare them for what's going to happen. The next day, Jesus would die. And it would throw the apostles into the greatest uncertainty of their lives. Everything they thought they had learned over the past 3 years was about to be thrown just in the air. You know, what happened? You know, what about the kingdom? How could Jesus be dead? All these things were going to shake them to their core. And in preparation for that, Jesus said, "Let not your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also." We're about to part, Jesus was saying, but I'm coming back and we're going to be together. I'm preparing a place that you can be with me. Eternity is certain. I may not know where I will be next year, next month, tomorrow, this afternoon, but I know where I'll be in 100 years. I know where I'll be in 1,000 years. I know where I'll be when time has ceased to exist. Because eternity is certain. Abraham was looking for a land where he could graze his animals. But he was looking for a great deal more than that. We're told he was looking for a city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. I should have pushed a couple of buttons already. I talked about that. All the heroes of faith died looking for something else. And that's the passage that we had read in the beginning. They were looking for something that they didn't ever find in this life. All these died in faith, without having received the promises, but having seen them and welcomed them from a distance, having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear that they are seeking a city of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they could have gone back. But as it is, they desire a better country that is a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. In all the uncertainties of life, we trust in the faithfulness of a steadfast and loving God. We trust in the certainty of his word. We trust in the unshakable kingdom of his church. We trust in the certainty of an eternal home that God has prepared. In the promise, "I will never leave you nor forsake you." Never. This morning, if you're not a Christian, we would encourage you to think seriously about that. We would encourage you to put your life in the hands of a faithful God. Or if in any other way this church could be of service to you, we'd encourage you to let that be known as we stand together and sing.